Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Chaf Hei Amun Aleph by the second line. Amar Rabba Bar Rav Huna Amar Rav. Sucher Amata Mayim Me'er of Yom Tov. It's a person who cuts off the waterway, the water channel on Erev Yom Tov. Ulemachar Yishkim Umatzaba Dagim. He gets up in the morning and he finds in that area that he cut off, that he designated, now there are fish in there. I mean, that was the expectation that there would be fish in there. Then Mutarin. They are Mutar. They're considered to be designated for Yom Tov, not Mukse, because here he cut off the water channel in order to segregate that water. And in doing so, he also happened to segregate the fish. So because of that, they are fine. Amar Rav Chisda, midivrei Rabbeinu nilmod, from the words of our Rebbe, over here Rav Chisda speaking as Rebbe, that's Rav, from that we can conclude, chaya shikinina bifardes, a animal, whether it's a bird, whether it's an animal that nests in one's orchard, einat tzricha zimun. You don't have to prepare it. You don't have to designate it, delineate that it is for Yom Tov, because by definition, if it's in your orchard, it's considered to be mukhan, considered to be yours and designated. Amar Rav Nachman, Rav Nachman responds to him, nafal chavrin, beravrita, our friend, his friend being Rav Chisda, who is a peer of his, has stuck his head into a machloket, into an issue that is not so simple. Because we'll see in a minute why there's a differentiation between the case of the fish and the case of the pardes. Ikedamre. Others say, Amar Rabba Rav Huna midivrei Rabbeinu nilmod. So instead of being Rav Chisda who makes the statement that we can extrapolate from the words of Rav, rather it's Rabba Rav Huna that extrapolates from the words of Rav. Again, an animal that's nesting or parking in your orchard is already considered to be in Mizuman. It's already considered to be designated. Amar Rav Nachman, Nafal Bar Chavrin Biravrita. Jim here, instead of saying our peer, he's saying Bar Chavrin, the son of our peer, because in the first instance, it was Rav Chisda who was making the statement, who was a peer of Rav Nachman, Rav Chisda, Rav Huna, Rav Nachman. On the other hand, over here, the person who's making the statement is Rabba Bar Rav Huna. Rav Huna, who is a peer of his, but Rabba Bar Rav Huna is the son of a peer. So this is Bar Chavrin Birav Rato, stuck his head into an issue which is not so simple. Now, here's the differentiation. Hatam loko avin masa. Hacha gavin masa. This is along the lines of your question. By the fish, he takes action. He actually plugs the water channel, stops up the water channel, and therefore he's done something that actively traps the fish, and therefore you can claim that he was mezameing the fish for Yom Tov. And then in his pardes, he's taken no action. He hasn't done anything that indicates whether he has knowledge of the item being there or that he intends to use this item on Yom Tov. And therefore you could differentiate between the case of a socher matmaim and the case of the pardes, and therefore it's not a good extrapolation of the din that Rav stated before. Umar says, the loba is zimun. Is it really true that you don't require any zimun on Fatanyo? Don't we have a breita? Chaya shekinina bepardes, tzricha lizamein. When an animal nests in the pardes, you have to prepare it, you have to indicate that you want to use it. Bitzipor dror, tzrich likshor biknafeha. And birds, who we saw yesterday, these are free birds. Birds that are not easily trapped. Then you have to actually tie it by its wings in order to indicate that you're going to use it. G'day shalo titchalef bi'ima, so it doesn't get mixed up with its mother, because they can exchange, they can be swapped out. V'zu eidut shehidu mipi shmaya v'avtalyom. And this is testimony that they had from Shmaya v'avtalyom, tiyuvto. So that is a strong refutation of the position that we said before, that you don't require zimun. Here, we're indicating that you do need to be mizamein. You have to do activities, active things, in order to indicate that the item is mizuman, is prepared for Yom Tov. It's not enough to have general dat about it, to know that it's there. Rather, we have to actually take action, which means you have to tie it, you have to be mizamein it, despite the fact that you have knowledge of it, or you know that it's there. It's not enough to do that. You actually have to be mizamein the item, or the animal. All right, then Gemara says, Umibai Zimun, do you really require Zimun over here? So before the question was the rhetorical question, right, which is, wait, we don't need Zimun? And then they prove that you do. Now the Gemara says, wait a minute, do you really need Zimun? Vatanya, I'm Rav Shimon ben Elazar, modim bet Shemai bet Hillel, al shehizminan betocha kein, These are the doves in the dovecote, that if he prepared them inside, he designated those that were in the nest in the dovecote, and then he comes back and he finds them on the board, the perch, that is before the dovecote. Shasurin. They agree that they're asurim because we assume that they got swapped out. That is true by the Yone Shovach, the Yone Aliyah, which we mentioned before. These are the doves in the dovecotes. These are the wild pigeons or doves. These are the birds that are nesting in the jars that are on the buildings that are placed there or in the birot. Aval avazim v'tanagolim v'yonei herdesiot. When it comes to geese, to chickens, and the yonei herdesiot, which are either pigeons, birds that were raised by hurdus, and that's where they got the name, or they're from that location. V'chaya shekinin abipardes, and an animal that nested in the orchard, mutarim, they are completely mutar, v'ein tzrichim zimun, and they don't require any preparation. So a free bird needs to be tied by its wings, in order that it doesn't get mixed up with its mother. So in a case where you have things that are tied, or things that you have moved beforehand, meaning that you've actually touched them and said, designated these items. They are, even if they're in these locations, they are all mutarim. But, ibilanot, if you're up in the trees, asurim shema yalevit losh. Because we're afraid you're going to go up and take it, and then you will break a branch, or you'll do something to the tree.
Not because the bird itself.
No, even if you prepared it, the problem is not the item, the bird or the animal, the problem is the location of the animal. And then there's a separate statement here, independent of muksa, which is any of these items that are found tied up, or they look like they've been lifted or placed in a certain location, they have a problem of gezel. Rashi claims, Sharishan Shikasran, O Nanan, Kanan Behagbatan. They were koneh them with hagbah, by lifting them, shehefker, nikna behagbah. Because by simply lifting them up, you are koneh the hefker. And that's why they're problematic mishum gezel, because someone else has interacted with them already. And that interaction already makes it theirs, so you can't take them anymore. Tosafot disagrees. He says that he doesn't think that hagbah has anything to do with this over here. Rather, he says, da'boto koneh behefker, ho mitasekhu behen kitzat. That simply looking at them, or interacting with the hefker is enough to be koneh for you. You don't actually need physical hagbah, real kinyan over here. You simply need interaction in order to be yours, and that's why there's a problem of gezel. But yet here we have a braita that indicates that the animals that are found in the pardes are considered to be designated mizuman, prepared for Yom Tov. We had a previous braita that says it doesn't work. Now all of a sudden we have a braita that says it does work. So how do I reconcile between the braita basically? So Amar Rav Nachman Lokasha, Haba, Habi'ima. It's the difference between it and its mother. Ima, Bizimun Sagila. Wait, its mother? It's enough just to be mezamin it? Zeda, Malyuta Bayu. You have to actually capture it. When it says over here, you tied up the bird, or you did something to the bird, it says you tied up Bita, Shalot Zitzchalefi Mima, so it won't get mixed up with its mother. But that means that you didn't do anything to the mother. So what he's indicating is, oh, well, in one case, we're talking about it, the bird, the baby bird. In the other case, we're talking about the mother bird. So you're telling me that the mother bird requires zimun and that's enough? Why is that enough? A mother bird, when we're talking about a tzipor, a drawer, that isn't sufficient. You need them to actually be captured. You need to do something in order to limit their space. Otherwise, they're not considered captured. So Amar Rav Nachman Yitzchak, idi v'idi bidida. Both of them are about the bird. One is talking about your orchard, your garden, that's within the city limits. The other one is talking about the garden that's outside of the city limits. This goes back to your question, how does he know that it was there? How do you know it didn't show up on Yom Tov itself? The answer is, when you're proximate to your garden, then you know that the animal's there. If you know that the animal's there, the fact that you're in an air enclosed area, it's nesting in your orchard, that already can be considered designated or mukhan liyom tov. On the other hand, if it's out in your orchard where it's not near your house, you have no clue that the animal's there, the bird's there. There you're going to require an active engagement in order to prepare it to be mezamenet for Yom Tov, because it's not on your mind. It's not something that you're thinking about because you have no clue that it's there. So the baby or the young bird that's hatched next door to you, that you know and that you have in mind for and that you are mezamen for Yom Tov. The one out in the field somewhere, far out, where you have no way of knowing that it's there, no way of having interaction with it. Therefore, there's no date elave. You don't have your mind on it, and therefore it's not considered to be a mizuman unless you actively engage it and say that it is mizuman. So again, you either need action, masa, we've seen that. If you tie something, if you lift it up, if you designate it, that does it, including socher amatamayim, as well as plugging the amatamayim, where you're doing something actively to engage in mizamein, the item, that works in terms of zimun. In terms of default zimun, that will only work when it's proximate to you and where you have the ability to notice it and to engage with it. So therefore you know it's there and you have in mind to utilize it. That might be enough. That might be sufficient. But if it's outside of your purview, outside of your perspective on Yom Tov and you have to go out to engage with it, then clearly you need active zimun in order to engage it on Yom Tov or for not to be muksa on Yom Tov. Beima misukenet. You have an animal that's teetering on death. Lo yishkot ela im kein yeshahut bayom lechol mimenu k'zayitzli. May not shecht it on Yom Tov. The reason to shecht it is prevent it from dying. If it dies by itself, it's a nevela. If you shecht it, now you have kosher animal, kosher meat. So what you want to do is you want to shecht it before it dies in order to have it be kosher animal, to be fine. Problem is that it's already after you ate your meal on Yom Tov. It's late in the day. So the only way you can do this is there's sufficient time left in the day that you could actually shecht it, then roast a kezayit worth of meat and eat it. Because then it would be the tzorech Yom Tov. Since it's the tzorech Yom Tov, we would permit it. You can even eat a kezayit of raw meat, carpaccio from the neck area, and that would suffice. You don't even have to roast it. If you could just eat the meat in that area, that would be okay. Shechta basadeh, lo yiviena b'mot, o b'motah. If you shecht it out in the field, don't bring it in on the poles or the litters. It may be a doi, varim, varim. But you can't bring it by hand, piece by piece. What we don't want is it to look like you're doing something that is, whether it's uvde dechol or avsha milta, something that's a public display of it. When you're carrying an animal on the poles and bringing it in, everybody sees that. Now, whether that's the common practice when you go to the shuk, the common practice when you're going to sell the item and you're doing large processing. So all of those things are just public displays, and they make people wonder what exactly is going on, whether there's Easter going on. And therefore, we try to say, look, if you want to do it on the Sadeh, that's fine. Just do it in a quiet way. Do it in a way that makes it look like it's for your household consumption, not for commercial use. Just because it's going to die doesn't make it a treifa. The treifa is only a case of a treifa when there's something wrong with the animal that would cause it to die in the next 12 months. And the list of treifot that we have in Chulin, it's going to be one of those treifot. Dying is not make it a treifa. Amar Rabbi Barava, hefshet v'nituach be'ola v'hu adin l'katzavim. An ola requires hefshet, the flaying of the animal. You need to remove the skin. V'nituach. And the quartering, you have to cut apart the evarim. That's true by an ola. Hu adin lakatzavim. Butchers should act in the same manner. They should skin the animal, and they should cut up the pieces. Mikan limdat Torah derech eretz. From here, the Torah teaches you the proper conduct. Shelo yochol adam basar, kodem efshet v'nituach. Person should not eat meat prior to flaying, removing the skin, and nituach, and quartering it and taking it apart. What's he teaching us? Of course, you're going to flay the animal and you're going to cut it up in order to eat it. So, maybe this comes to deny the position of Rav Huna, which is, Dam Rav Huna, Behema b'chaya b'chazkat isur omedet, has a chazaka being asur, ad shivadalacha b'me nishchata, until you know for certain that it was shechted. Nishchata. Once the animal is shechted, b'chazkat heter omedet, aji v'dalecha b'men itrefa. Then it has a heter, a tzad heter, a chazkat heter, until you know that it is a trefa. What Rav Huna says is, if you know that an animal is alive, or an animal in its state of being alive, then it remains in the status of being asur. What that isur is, we'll discuss in 1 second. But it remains in that status. The default status of this animal is asur. So therefore, if there's a safek in the shechita, the safek would be determined by what the chazaka was beforehand. The chazaka was a sur, therefore the shechita is a safek, it will remain a sur. On the other hand, once the shechita has been done properly, you can assume that the animal is kasher, everything is fine, unless you prove to me that it is a treifa. That means, according to Rav Huna, I don't have to check the animal for a treifa. I can assume it's not a treifa, unless I find out otherwise. So because of that, once I've shechted it, you don't have to check anything. You can eat it as it is, without doing any checking. So what you're suggesting here is, the reason that you have to do the flaying and the cutting up is because we don't hold like Rav Huna, which means that after you shechted, you must check for the trefot. And in checking for the trefot, you can only check for trefot if you cut open the animal, if you flay it, and you are menateach the animal. So that's what the Gemara says. Are you saying to me that that is what the point of this statement is? It's to tell us that Rav Huna is wrong. The chazaka that an animal is not a trefa is not a good chazaka. You have to check the animal. So that is that what you're trying to say? Now, here the Gemara says that Rav Huna says when you're alive, when the animal's alive, it has a chezkat isur. What is that isur that it has? What's the chazaka of isur that if you have a safek in the shechita remains a sur? Rashi claims that the isur is Eivir Min HaChai. When an animal is alive, there's an isur of Eivir Min HaChai, and therefore it has a chezkat isur. Whereas once it's shechted, stam behemot, the robe of behemot are not trefot, and therefore it has a chazaka of being kasher. Right. Assuming that nishchata, once you have established that the shechita was there and good, then the chezka is that it's mutar. Tosafot takes issue with Rashi and says, wait a minute, if the chezkat iser is Eivir Min HaChai, as soon as the animal's dead, there's no longer an iser of Eivir Min HaChai. Doesn't matter how the animal died. If the animal died by natural causes, the animal died by shechita, it's irrelevant because the animal is now dead. As long as the animal is dead in front of you, there's clearly no Eivir Min HaChai. The iser dissipated, or basically was eliminated by itself, by the very fact that the animal is dead. So where is the chezkat isur that remains if you have a safek in the shechita? Doesn't matter, in the safek in the shechita, right now I have a dead animal in front of me. So if you tell me the chezkat isur is Eivir Min HaChai, whether the shechita was good or not, the animal no longer has Eivir Min HaChai, and that means the chezkat isur disappeared. So Tosafot says over here, says, Hey Nirali, the chezkat isur, Tzulumar, the chezkat shalom nishchata. As a chazaka that was not shechted, achi vidalecha umishum isur she'ena zvucha, the isur of not being shechted. Well, if you have to shecht the animal to make it kosher, then an unshechted animal is problematic. That's the shita of Tosvot. So we actually have a machloket amongst the Rishonim. It's really a sugyo from Chulin that we discussed in the introduction to Chulin with regards to shechita. Question is, what is the status of shechita? Is shechita a mitzvah to do? A mitzvah to say to do? It is a mitzvah of shechita, what we call an isur asay, or is it simply a matir? So something that makes it available to you. From Rashi, it sounds like that it's simply a matir. You do shechita in order to be matir the fact that you want to eat the meat. There's no obligation to do the mitzvah of shechita. It's not a mitzvah necessarily to do shechita. It's not necessarily an isur asay. You want to eat meat, you have to shech the animal. Again, similar to what we have by gitin. If a person wants to get divorced, they have to do it derech a get. That doesn't mean there's a mitzvah to give a get. The get is the process by which the Torah tells you how you go about dissolving kiddushin. So shechita is the way that the Torah tells you, the way or the method by which the Torah tells you that you can eat meat. That is through shechita. It's simply a matir in that case. The Rambam, on the other hand, the Rambam is moneh as part of his mitzvot, a mitzvah asay of shechita. He thinks that there is a mitzvah to do shechita. That mitzvah asay is accomplished when you do shechita. It's not to remove any isur, it's not to be matir necessarily, it's simply there is a mitzvah of shechita. Now, it might be a mitzvah kiyumit, which is, again, you're not obligated to go ahead and actively do shechita. We don't demand you do shechita. We just say, you want to eat meat, you must do shechita, you must do the mitzvah of shechita. It's not something to be a matir, but there's an active mitzvah. Once you want to eat meat, there's a mitzvah to do shechita. That's the shita of the Rambam. The Ramban on his Hasagot on the Rambam, and a number of places in the Rivet, in the Minyan HaMitzvot HaKatzar, the Ramban in the Klalim, or Masig on the Rambam, and say, no, there is no mitzvah asay here. What mitzvah asay do you have here? It's an Isser asay. The Isra say is because Torah demands shechita, that implies that the animal has some sort of isur that is associated with it. So the shechita removes the isur and not an act of mitzvah. As what they say there is, the ikar is not the asay, the ikar is the lav. The lav is you may not eat this animal. How do I remove that? I do shechita. Isur asay, which is that there's an isur, and that isur is removed by doing shechita. Not that there's a mitzvah to do shechita, but that's how I remove the isur that's here, which is what's proposed here by the Tosafot. The Tosafot, what isur do you have by shechita? It creates a new isur called enas vucha, not shechted. There is a not shechted animal is a sur, and the way to remove it is to do shechita. But there's this isur called not shechted. So that's what the Ramban also suggests over here. The Ritzba in Shvuot on Daf Chav Dalet and the Tosafot there disagrees. Tosafot brings this pshat. He says he doesn't think there's any such isur. He doesn't know where this isur came from. You want to eat meat? You need the matir of shechita, similar to what seems Rashi is indicating over here. Now, the advantage of Tosafot is that even after the animal is dead in front of us, the inez vucha remains. Because inez vucha is the status of an animal while it's alive. And even when it's dead, it's considered inez vucha unless you can prove to me that there was a zvicha, that there was a shechita. If I have a safek in the shechita...
The zvicha occurs. Anybody that witnesses it knows that there's a zvicha. Right.
Oh, so that's fine. You're right. That's what the Rav Huna says. As long as there's a shechita there, then enes vucha disappears, and now you're with the chezkat of kshira and not treifa. The question arises when you have a safek in the shechita. When you have a safek in the shechita, for Rashi, the animal's still dead, so Avraham Minachai goes. Doesn't matter. Even if it's an avela, Avraham Minachai is gone at this point in time. For Tosafot, if you have an isra, say, enes vucha doesn't disappear unless you could prove to me that there was shechita. Enes Bukha is not terminated by death because you have to prove there was shechita to remove the Enes Bukha status. Enes Bukha means it wasn't shechted. So you have to have shechita to remove it. That's not supposed to approach. The answer that you have to give for Rashi is that even though Avraham Minachai disappears with death, as soon as Avraham disappears, then enters in the problem of Nevela. And in general, we have this concept in Cheskat Isur that a chazak of an Isur can pass to another Isur. Meaning that if you have a Cheskat Avraham Minachai, and the animal is now dead in front of you, even if it's a Nevela now, there's an Isur Nevela. The Chazaka persists, just in a different form. It persists, meaning that it moves from Avraham Minachai to Nevela, unless it can prove otherwise. And that's what you're going to have to say for Rashi, even though Tosafot says, well, once it's dead, Avraham Minachai disappears. What you have to say is that that persists in another form, that Isur of Nevela. Alright, so just in summary, we have different opinions with regards to Shechita. How does the mitzvah of shechita work? Is it a mitzvah asay to do shechita? Is it a isur asay? Or is it a matir? And you have all these three different opinions in the Rishonim. And even within the mitzvah kiyumit, in the fact that it is a mitzvah kiyumit, meaning that if you want to eat basar and it's a mitzvah kiyumit, what is that mitzvah kiyumit? Is the mitzvah kiyumit to do shechita? Or is the mitzvah kiyumit to remove the isur that's there? So you can even phrase it, or you can ask that question, even if you believe that it's a mitzvah kiyumit. Vanantnan, matnitin kid Rav Huna. Don't we have a Mishnah that supports Rav Huna's position, which is, titran, Rav Akiva Omer, afilu kzayit chai mi beit pichata. Our Mishnah is a support for Rav Huna's position. Because Rav Akiva says in our Mishnah that you could eat basar from the place of shechita, without doing any hefshet minituach, why are you eating from the Beit HaShechita? Because there you can get to the meat, you can access the meat without doing anything, without flaying it. So what do you see? My love, mi Beit V'Chata Mamash. You can take it from the Makom HaShechita, and we allow you then to eat meat without doing any check. There's a chezkat kashrut with regards to this animal. Lo. Mi Makom Shotovechet Achidata. You mixed up. When Rabbi Kiva said, Mikom T'V'Chata, you thought that meant from the Makom of the Shechita. That's not what he means. It means from the makom that it is tovechet achilata. It's shecht, or grinds its food, meaning in the digestive system. He suggests that you could eat from the area of the digestive system some meat, and of course to get to the digestive system you would have to do nehevshed b'nituach, and then Rabbi Akiva is not a support for Rav Huna anymore because you would have to open up the animal and you would have to see the innards and then make a determination whether it's a treif or not. Va'atani Rabbi Chiya, Makom tvichata mamash. Okay, that's a really nice explanation. That's a cute explanation. But we have a brighter from Rabbi Chiya that says specifically that makom tvichata means the makom ha-shechita. So that means that what Rabbi Akiva is saying here is the makom shechita. Elo Rami bar Abba orach arok mashmalan. Rather, Rami bar Abba is not coming to teach us a din, a lachik din, to oppose Rav Huna. Rather, he's just simply coming to teach us derech eretz. So Rashi says, not because of an iser treifa, but simply this is the proper conduct. This is the proper way to act. That's the way Rashi learns it. Tosafot, on the other hand, says, he says, I'm not sure what that means, because the Gemara is about to say that if you eat from it and don't do this, that you have a problem, that it's not a good thing. So it seems more than a simple derech eretz. It seems to be that it's a requirement. So Tosafot here says something interesting. He says, Miu im nitzei treifa lachar shachal unenash kishogeg v'lo kohenes shelo yalo l'maher kol kach. Tosafot says, you're right. There's no iser of eating before you check it for a treifa. It has a chazaka. But if after the fact it's found to be a treifa, then your designation is a designation of shogeg and not a designation of onus, because you have the ability to verify the chazaka. The fact that you didn't verify the chazaka already makes you not someone who is onus rachmana patre, that you're totally off the hook because what could you have done? The answer is you could have done something. You could have checked it. And therefore your liability goes up if you don't do the checking. And that's what Tosafot says, Orach Ara Kamash Milan, that this is the proper conduct and you're going to be held liable if you don't exercise this proper conduct if it's found to be a trefa. You're right. If the chazaka works out and everything's fine, then you're fine. You're not violating any isur. But on the other hand, if it's a trefa, then your level of culpability went up because of the fact that you could have checked it. And that's a general principle in chazaka, that it's a chazaka that you efshel levarer. When you have a chazaka that can be checked, do we demand that you check it? There's a chazaka that can be checked. Do we say, no, we're so mech on the chazaka? We say, no, go ahead and check it. If you have a chazaka and you can check it, why not check it? Because it would be better than using or utilizing the chazaka. So here, that's what Tosafot is suggesting, the Gemara is saying, it's better to verify the chazaka rather than to simply rely on the chazaka in this case. Kedetanya, right, lo yochal adam shum ubatzel mirosho. Person shouldn't eat onions and garlic from their heads, elo mi'alav, from the sides where the leaves are. Bimachal, someone who eats in that way, harizei rabatan, some person who is gluttonous. It's just not proper conduct. Kiyotzebo, lo yishte adam koso bebatachat. Person shouldn't gulp down his goblet, his cup, in one shot. Bim shata, if he does it in this way, harizei gargiran. Again, this person is a gluttonous, is a drunkard, person who just takes everything down in one shot. It's unacceptable. Tanu Rabbanan, oshote koso bebatachat, harizei gargiran. One who drinks his cup in one shot, that is a lack of etiquette. Shnayim derech eretz. If you do it in two gulps or two sips, that is proper conduct, proper etiquette. Shlosha migasei ruach. If you're sipping it down and it takes three sips down, that's already a certain amount of haughtiness. That is unacceptable that you're delicately drinking down your drink. So you have the different layouts of the proper etiquette and how to drink. Vamarami baraba. Chatzuva mikatea ragleon de rishayo. Chatzuva will cut off the legs of the rishayim. This is latid labo. Chatzuva, as Rashi points out, is a type of asev, a type of vegetation that grows with very deep roots that go straight down. And Rashi mentions this was used. The Gemara in Baba Kama says that boti chem Yeshua taretz. Yeshua used this to set up the gvulot in Eretz Yisrael because it grows directly down. So when you set it up as a border, you're not going to have it spread and worry about where the border was. You'll know exactly where the border was. So here, the chatzuva will cut off the legs of the rishayim because the rishayim are people who engage in theft, people who are misig vul, change boundaries. So the chatzuva will come and cut off their legs, meaning it's obviously a parable and a gadol, but the point being that the chatzuva will act appropriately and go straight down. It doesn't look to spread into other people's property. It will cut off the legs of Hashem who are extending themselves into other people's property, either by stealing or mesig vul. Nitiya mikateya raglion de katzvaya. Nitiya is orla. A tree that in its first year, 3 years may not be eaten, a sapling whose fruits can't be eaten because they are orla. That will cut off the legs of the butchers. The butchers here are referring to those that quickly eat. They don't do hefshed v'nituach. They jump the gun before they've checked for the treifa, and they go ahead and eat. So the same thing. Orla, which is fruit before its time, it's premature fruit, so too, it will come to take care of the katzvaya, the butchers, who were premature in their eating of the meat. Udeboli nidot, as she says, boli nidot, those that sleep with a nida, he says that they weren't patient enough to allow the woman to go to the mikveh, or you could argue, forgetting about mikveh, someone who wasn't careful with the onot. Tur masa mikadea ragleon desaneon shel Yisrael. Tur masa lupain will cut off the legs of soneon shel Yisrael. Here it's a lashon sagi nahor. That means the Bnei Yisrael themselves. Shenemar, because it says in the pasuk in Shoftim, v'yusifu Bnei Yisrael asot harab b'nei Hashem. Bnei Yisrael continue to do the bad in the eyes of Hashem. In Shoftim, we have a description of a circular problem that happens, which is that Bnei Yisrael do bad, Hashem causes difficulty for them, then they call out to Hashem, they get saved, as soon as they get saved, they go back to doing Avodah Zarah back again. So in the Sefer Shoftim, the Navi describes this problem of this circle. So here it says, Ve'yusifu la'asot ha'rab b'nei Hashem, ve'abdu et ha'ba'alim. They worshipped all these different gods, the Ba'alim, Vet Ashtarot, Vet Elohei Aram, Vet Elohei Tzidon, Vet Elohei Moab, Vet Elohei Bnei Amon, Vet Elohei Plishtim, Vayezvu et Hashem, Velo Avduhu. They leave Hashem and they did not worship Him. Mimashma, Shenemar Vayezvu et Hashem, that it says that they left Hashem. Anyway, Velo Avduhu, of course they didn't worship Hashem. If they left Hashem, they're not worshipping Him. So Ma Toma Lomar Velo Avduhu, what does it mean that they did not worship Him? Amar Belazar, Amar Kosh Baruch, Afilu Kutumus Azeh, even like this lupine, Sheshokim Oto Sheva Piamim, that you cook it 7 times, and then you eat it as a dessert. Lo asuni banai, my children did not make me. So if you look in the Pasuk, there are actually 7 foreign gods that are mentioned in the Pasuk. So what Hashem says is, even like the turmos is not edible, it's not good in the first 7 times you cook it. Finally, after that 7 times, then it's good to eat. And then it is edible, and it can be used as a dessert. So Hashem says, even after going through all these different gods, they couldn't be bothered to worship me. Now whether that means that they didn't also worship Hashem, meaning that they worshiped these 7 gods plus they could have worshiped Hashem, at least they could have worshiped Hashem along with them, and they couldn't even be bothered to do that. They just worshiped the other gods and not Hashem. But whether Hashem says, even after all these 7 times and all the difficulties that I brought on them for worshiping these gods, they still didn't figure it out and come back to me and worship me. So one of those 2 expressions, God saying, like the turmos, which even after all that's gone through, then it's edible, you didn't even get to that point with me. You didn't worship me in the end. And that's Hashem's complaint to Bnei Yisrael, that the turmos will be the one that cuts off the ragleon of Sonein Shri Yisrael, who did not act appropriately. All right. Tana Mishmei the Rabbi Meir. Mipnei man nitna Torah Yisrael. Why was Torah given to Bnei Yisrael? Pnei Shein Azin. Because they are difficult, strong-headed, bold. Tana de Rabbi Shmuel, Mimino Eishdat Lomo. So that the Torah's description in Zot HaBracha was that it came as a fire from Hashem's right hand. So Mer says over here, Amar Shkoru Gadosh Baruch Hu in the Halolu Shetinatin Lehem Dat Eish. These people, proper for them to receive the laws, the religion of fire. Because since they are Azin, then the only thing that would help them out is the Torah of fire, that will diminish their azut. Ikedamre, datayim she'edu ish. Religion of these individuals, the Torah of these individuals is fire. Shil malei nitna Torah to Israel. For if it were not for the fact that Torah was granted to Israel, ein kulama v'lashon yuchulim lamod bifneim. Nobody would be able to stop them. As Rashi says over here, because Torah is meteshet kocham umenachnat libam. The Torah weakens them physically, it also makes them more humble, or brings a certain amount of humility to them. Without that, they would be unstoppable. Whether it's in battle, whether it's in activities that they would engage in, they'd be unstoppable, so the Torah brings them down. A similar concept by the story of Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish. Rabbi Yochanan is trying to convince Reish Lakish to come over to the side of Torah. Beforehand, the Gemara says that he was able to jump from the banks of it onto the boat and back in one leap. After he started to learn Torah, he couldn't do that anymore. And the God says, because Torah mateshet kocham, the Torah diminishes the physical strength of the individual. And so here you have a similar concept. Vaino damar Shimon ben Lakish. That's what Rav Shimon Lakish says. Gimel azim hein. There are 3 individuals who are bold. Israel beumot, Bnei Israel amongst the nations. Kelev bechayot, the dog amongst the animals. Tarnagol beofot, the chicken amongst the birds. Beishamim af eiz bebehemadaka, even goats amongst the smaller animals. Beishamim af slaf beilanot, and so too the caper bush amongst the bushes or amongst the trees. Rashi says he has no idea why the caper bush was picked. I don't know why it's azut. Tosafot says one of two reasons, either because the caper bush, if you remember from the Gemara in Brachot, the caper bush gives three edible items. Its shoots, its leaves, and its berries are all edible. So that's a certain amount of azut, that it has all these edible parts to it. Or, Tosafot says that when you say in Pitomak Toret, Yain Kafrisin, what is Yain Kafrisin? Rashi says Yain Kafrisin is Yain that comes from Kafres. Tosafot says that's the wrong interpretation. Yain Kafrisin is Yain that comes from the caper bush. It comes from the squeezing the berries of the caper bush. Why do you put in Yain Kafrisin? Because it makes it B'neshu Azah. Because it's very Az. So he says the berries of the caper bush produce this Az, this certain amount of strength, and that's what he says the source from the Gemara here is that the caper bush, the tzlaf, is Az. But you see in all these individuals, again, Yisrael Be'umot, which is what we're speaking about here, they're Azin, that they have a certain amount of brazenness, right, brashness amongst the nations. How does this little whippersnapper nation go about and do all of these things and expect to be regarded amongst the other nations? Yet, that's what happens. So that's a certain amount of Azut. The Caleb who barks at everything that goes by, even if the animal's bigger than it, even if it's something that would endanger it, it always barks. The Tarnagol, it's also the Tarnagol, which is the rooster, is always calling out, despite the fact that there might be in danger itself because it's drawing attention to itself. And the A's, the goat, I assume there is Az Bekashed, that it goes up the mountains, and it's able to climb up to the high places, so it has a certain amount of hardiness associated with it. All right. Shakta b'sadeh lo yivena b'mot. Tanu banan. Ein esuma yotze b'maklo. A blind person may not go out with a staff, v'lo aru ebetar milo, and not a shepherd with his sack, shepherd's sack. Ve'yotzim b'ki say, you're not allowed to go out with a chair. Echad ha'ish ve'echad ha'isha. It doesn't matter if it's a man or a woman. Ini, is that really true? V'al ha'shalach Rav Yaakov b'idi, zakein ha'echad ha'ya b'shkunotenu. There was this elderly gentleman in our neighborhood. He went out with his gludki. The gludki, as Rashi explains over here, was some sort of pedestal, some sort of seat or throne that he would go out with. If the public needs him, then it's totally mutar. They were depending on that which Damar Ana Afikte the Rav Huna. He testified that he carried out Rav Huna, Mihini Lishili Mishilidini, carried him from this location to that location and back on Yom Tov Giv de Drusha. Ana Afikte the Mar Shmuel, Mishimsha Lutulo, Mitulu Lishimsha. I carried Mar Shmuel from the sun to the shade and the shade to the sun. So therefore we see that you're allowed to carry people. You're allowed to have items that are, you know, public displays of carrying and honor given to these individuals. It's not considered to be a tircha yeterah. It's not considered to be a ziluta d'yom tov to do these items. Hotam kadar taima imayu rabim tzrichim lo mutar. We already said what the reason of this is. The reason for this is the fact that it is rabim tzrichim lam. Since the rabim are they're necessary for the rabim, we allow you to move them. Whether that's for efficiency and you can move them quickly, or it's to carry them. These items are the equivalent of what we'd call like a rickshaw, or some sort of a throne they used to carry them on. They used to have a bunch of men get together and they'd race them over. They can carry them on their backs. So we allowed them to do this, even though on Yom Tov it might be a ziluta de Yom Tov, because it seems like excessive work and excessive type of publicity. Nevertheless, if Rabbim Tzrichim Lo, we allow you to do it. Amalei Rav Nachman Lechamer Ba'ada, Shliach Tzion. So Chamar Ba'ado, who is Shliach Tzion, why was he a Shliach Tzion? Because he used to go to Tzion, he used to go to Yerushalayim to visit all the time. So he went back and forth from Bavel to Eretz Yisrael to Yerushalayim. Kisalach Tahotam, when you get over there to Eretz Yisrael, Akif, go out of your way, Vezil Al-Suma De Tzur, and go up the ascents of Tzur. Vezil Al-Gabed Rav Yaakov Ba'idi, go to visit Rav Yaakov Ba'idi who lives there. Ubay Minei, ask him this question. Kisei Ma Atun Bei. This kisei, these types of chairs or thrones that people are carried on, what's the story? Adaz lahotam, once he got there, nachnav shei Rabbi Yaakov Ba'idi. He didn't get there in time, he passed away before he got there. Kisoli, ashkechei the Rabbi Zrika, when he was going up, he happened to bump into Rabbi Zrika, amalei, kisei ma'atun bei. He couldn't get to Rabbi Yaakov Ba'idi, so he figures he might as well ask the other person he bumps into. Amalei, hachi amar Rabbi Ami, buvad shelo yikatef. You can do it, but just do it in a manner that is a shinoi. You can't do katef. So my ubuvaj lo katef. What does that mean? That you can't do it bikatev? Amar Rav Yosef, Brei D'Rava, Balonki. Now, what the difference being is, Rashi describes here katef is that the individuals put their arms onto the other one's shoulder, and therefore they create some sort of balance. There's two things here. One is there's a number of people that are interacting because they put their arms on each other. Say, for instance, you have three men lined up. Each one puts their arm on the shoulder of the one in front of him, and then the chair sits on that line of those individuals on their shoulders. That's number one. Number two is the height of this item. It's up above their heads. It's very high up. So that's not allowed. So what is allowed is the chair that is carried by individuals either because it has handles on it and they can carry it down below. They don't carry it on the shoulders. They carry it down at their waist level by putting the handles. So that's allowed because that's not excessive. So that's allowed. Ini, Rav Nachman Sharele, the Yalto, the Mepik, Alonki. Wait a minute. Rav Nachman allowed Yalto, who's his wife, go out on the Alonki. Shani Yalto, Debeito. She was okay because she was afraid. She was fearful of falling. Meimar Marzucha, Mikatvelu, Bishabta, Derigla, Mishum, Biututa. They were Mikatvelim. They did put them up high, even though that wasn't permitted on Yom Tov, because they were afraid of falling. So that factor of them falling or fear of falling, we allow you to do it, even though normally it would not be allowed. They did it because of the crowds. The crowds were too much, and they couldn't get to their seats easily. So if the Mekatfilu, if they picked them up, and they zoomed them over the people, they could get them there to their seat quickly, plus the people wouldn't have to stand up, it wouldn't be a Tarchat Zibur. So there are reasons for the dispensation. So we see here that there is a certain amount of dispensation for individuals, if they have fear, or if there's duchah d'tzibur, we allow you to do it. Because the Iser here is not a real Iser. It's just a zilut of the Yom Tov. So if you have a mitigating factor, we're going to allow you to do the zilut of the Yom Tov in the mitigating factor. Obviously, we're talking about a very hierarchical society in which that was the common practice. That people who were of stature were carried in and were carried around on these thrones, on these chairs. That was the common practice. Obviously, today, that would not be the case, or that's not as common. Now, what's interesting here is that the Gemara says that the reason you're allowed to do this is if it's Tzorech Rabim. Yet, one of the individuals that said here is Yalto. Nachman's wife was allowed to be carried. What type of Tzorech Rabim is that? Tosafot, right? Tosafot poses the question. It is true that if Nachman gets into trouble with his wife Yalto, we've had the Gemaras like that, where he didn't give her to drink from the Koshel Brocha. So Rav Nachman, if he doesn't take care of his wife, does get into trouble. But here Tosafot says, because she was the daughter of the Reish Galuta, therefore, she's a Tzorech Rabim, because people need to come to speak to her about issues or important issues, or they think they can access the Rosh Gola through her. So because of that, she had a certain amount of stature, and the Rabim did need her. So Tosafot claims that it was a case of Tzorech Rabim. The last thing is about the Tzuma b'Maklo. Over here, the Tzuma is not allowed to go out with his Makel. Rashi again says it's a problem of having Derechol, the Zikaluta de Yom Tov. That's the way of the Chol. Now, obviously, if it's the necessity of the Tzuma to go out with their Makel, like the walking sticks, then that is allowed. What Rav Moshe talks about in the Tshuva is people go out with a staff that is just for a kavod and not necessary for their movement. In that case, the Gemara here says that it's problematic. He says that it's such a common practice today, he doesn't know what to do about it. He thinks it's really a sewer to go out with these staffs, with these walking sticks.
A walking stick for kavod.
Right, for kavod, for things that it's not necessary for the person to walk or the ability of them to move around. We talked already around this in the Gemara and Shabbat with regards to crutches and regards to wheelchairs or canes, that it may not be considered carrying because of the necessity of that item in terms of the ability of the person to walk. We discussed more of the details there about what is or what is not mutar. But over here, it's talking about something that's not necessary for the person to walk. It's simply a matter of kavod or style. Again, if you remember back to the early 1900s, there was such an idea that a person was of kavod of stature, walked with a cane on their arm, walked out of the cane. Moshe says, I don't understand how they go about doing this. There is no heter for carrying these items on Yom Tov. This is exactly our Gemara. Suma, Yotze, B'maklo is not allowed. It's a Ziluta Yom Tov, and especially in the case where there is no reason for it except for the Kavod. And therefore, Rav Moshe says, I want to be Yoser, I just don't have the power because everybody's doing it. So I think it's a Sor. I don't have a Limud Zchut on these individuals, but it's just something that's important to know, that there is this idea of things that are just done for Kavod are not necessarily Mutarim because it's a certain amount of Ziluta de Yom Tov. Okay, we'll stop over here.